Radio for Catholic and other Christians. This is 990 WDEO, Ypsilanti, Detroit, or on the internet at WDEO.net.
And good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta. Thanking you for being here. We've got another hour in front of us. And we're going to learn about a priest who passed away last year. Many of you probably never heard of him. He was a striking force in Washington, D.C. He was a major player and builder of the Catholic Information Center there in Washington, D.C. He was deeply committed to the work of personal evangelism, you know, sharing faith in Jesus with others, and was especially effective at doing so. Father Arnie Panula, we're going to talk with Mary Eberstadt, a longtime friend of Father Arnie, who in the last 3 months of his life, with his agreement and actually his insistence, just asked questions of him as he approached eternity, and giving him a chance to reflect on his priesthood, life in a post-Christian America, what the future looks like, how he's encountering the end of his life, his mortality, and how he's looking forward to his passing from this world. That's coming up in this hour. Also, we're going to talk to Nina Shea from the Hudson Institute, where her area of expertise is international religious freedom. It's been about 2 months since the China Holy See Provisional Agreement on appointing bishops was signed. And unfortunately, it looks as though the only winner in this agreement is China. The communist Chinese have been, again, continuing the persecution of the church. There seems to be no letting up. There have been the appointment of bishops without papal approval. Nina's going to walk us through some of the problems that we're facing there. Again, it's 2 months out. There's still a chance to not ratify the agreement. But in the meantime, it's a real problem for Chinese Catholics. But first, let's get to today's headlines.
Thanks, Al. Good afternoon, everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News for Thursday, November 29th. It's the Feast of St. Saturninus. Today's news is brought to you by Charity Mobile, supporting pro-life and Catholic causes at CharityMobile.com. President Trump is calling his former attorney, Michael Cohen, a liar after he pled guilty of lying to Congress about a Trump Tower Moscow project. NBC's Pete Williams has the latest on Trump's reaction.
The president's right. He was allowed to do whatever he wanted to as a business matter with Russia when he was simply a candidate, a private citizen. The question is whether his public statements conform to what he was actually doing. Secondly, he's right that Michael Cohen is going to get a reduced sentence because in court documents the government says even though the maximum penalty for lying to Congress is 5 years, the government's going to recommend or would not object to a sentence of 0 to 6 months.
President Trump is on his way to the G20 summit in Argentina. South Dakota Republican John Thune, who also chairs the Senate Republican Conference, says while there, Trump should work to focus trade relations with China.
I'm hoping that there will be some constructive discussions that get held and hopefully some forward progress with respect to the trade relationship that we have with China, that they will end some of these trade abuses and create a more level playing field.
The two-day summit starts tomorrow in Buenos Aires. Trump was slated to meet with Russian President Vladimir Putin, but has canceled that meeting, citing Russia aggressions against Ukraine. The president says Russia hasn't returned Ukrainian ships and sailors after naval skirmishes. More than 70 Jewish groups are urging Congress to pass two bills designed to fight anti-Semitism. The Special Envoy to Monitor and Combat Anti-Semitism Act would upgrade the role of the State Department Global Anti-Semitism Envoy. The Combating European Anti-Semitism Act asks the U.S. to ensure the safety of Jewish communities in Europe. I'm Steve Clark, Ave Maria Radio News.
Good afternoon, I'm Al Cresta. You may not have heard of Father Arnie Panula. He was a brilliant priest from Washington, again, associated with the fabled Catholic Information Center there in D.C. He dedicated his life to bringing others to Christ. Mary Eberstadt spent time with him over his final few months and engaged him in some very profound conversations about church history, what it means to be a faithful disciple, how to show forth the kingdom in our lives. And Mary joins us now. She is a senior research fellow at the Faith and Reason Institute, author of many books, including most recently The Last Homily, Conversations with Father Arne Pianula. Mary, good to have you with me.
It's good to be here again, Al. Thank you.
This is really a fascinating book. Tell me a little bit about the relationship you had with Father Arne.
Well, first I have to say it's the most unexpected book I've written. I didn't intend to write a book. What happened was that Father Arne, who was the gravitational center of the Catholic Information Center in downtown Washington, mm-hmm. would have me come in to speak, and we had, you know, lots of Catholic events there.
Right.
And at one point, we had a joke going between us where he had read a eulogy I'd written for a friend, and he said, "I like the way you write about your dead friends. Will you write about me too when I die?"
Oh,
it was 10 years ago. We were both very healthy, and it was a joke. And I said, "Sure, but only if you write about me, if I go first." So we had this inside joke. And then he got stage 4 cancer, and I showed up when he was released to hospice care. And he said, "Well, now it's time to make good on our joke." So I started taking notes on our conversation because the doctors had given him days or weeks to live. But instead, he stayed on for 3 months, defying all the medical odds, and it gave us the opportunity for a number of conversations about all kinds of subjects, about art and music and vocation and how to live a good life and what kind of advice he gave to young professionals and church history and really an astonishing breadth of conversation topics and an astonishing look into the mind of a very faithful, Harvard-educated, brilliant priest.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a great privilege to record these conversations and to try and put them out there for posterity.
So you went back pretty far with him, to some very basic questions, like, why do you believe in God? And he didn't mind, I suppose, huh, answering all these.
Oh, no, not at all. And he answered them with a forthrightness and a faith, a joyous faith, the likes of which I think is rare to encounter in life.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
everyone who knew him said the same thing of him during those final months. This was a man happily racing to the finish line. This was a man happy to be meeting his maker. And all the while, he was nevertheless dispensing the same kind of advice, giving the same spiritual guidance to the parade of people who were in and out of his rooms, really right up until the moment he passed away.
Yeah.
So
mm-hmm.
it was an astonishing look at what great faith can give you and what you can give to other people on account of it.
Tell me about a little bit about his upbringing, and I know you talked about his call to priesthood and his faith in God. Was he raised in a Catholic home?
He was raised in a Catholic home, but didn't describe himself as particularly devout until he went to Harvard, and one of the many fascinating stories he told me was the story about why he became a priest. He said he hadn't really thought about it, but then he was on the crew team at Harvard, and he was friends with another rower, and this other athlete dropped off the team and joined the military and then was killed shortly afterwards in Vietnam. And Father Arne said when he heard that his friend had died, his first thought was, I wish I had had more conversations with him about the state of his soul, and I wish that I could have affected where he ended up after death. And he said, that was my first conscious thought of spiritual fatherhood.
Interesting.
I thought that was an arresting story, like
yeah.
so many others that
yes.
he told, because he zeroed in on what is most important, which is eternity.
Right, right. So that kind of initiates his sense of mission and call, this idea of spiritual paternity. What were the influences that furthered him along?
Well, he was a great believer in Providence, and he wrote a dissertation 600 pages long about the role of Providence in the thought of John Henry Newman. So he thought about these matters deeply from a theological perspective, but really what he was best known for in Washington, D.C. and beyond was bringing people into the church and taking care of the souls of young professionals, especially, who arrive in Washington, which, as you know, is a pretty mixed bag as as spirituality is concerned and temptation, etc. And he would gather these young professionals around himself via various programs that the Catholic Information Center would run, and he would give them a spiritual refuge in a city that is not known for spiritual refuge.
Mm-hmm.
And he would advise them about how to live a good life and the importance of the sacraments. The Catholic Information Center is the closest tabernacle to the White House, for example. And so these groups would grow by the year under his tutelage, and it was a remarkable thing to see.
Is the Catholic Information Center associated with Opus Dei?
Yes, it is, and he was a priest of Opus Dei.
Okay.
And that was another unusual thing about the book, because I'm not a member of Opus Dei.
Mm-hmm.
It was characteristic of Father Arne that he wanted someone who was not from Opus Dei to be writing about him after his death. And this was another thing. He insisted only that if a book were to appear, it would have to appear after his death, because he said, I don't want anything written in my lifetime, because it might look like self-promotion.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now that, again, is a humility that is rarely encountered in this world.
What were some of the things he did for relaxation, for respite?
Well, he was an athlete and a gardener, and we talk about that as well. I was particularly interested in his avocation as a gardener, because that was also characteristic and symbolic to me of his effect on other people's lives, the way he made other people flourish. But I guess, Al, what was really most important to me was that here was someone, Harvard-educated, thought he was going to be a businessman. He could have been anything. But he threw his entire life at God and the priesthood. And that is to say, he's someone who knew the secular world inside and out,
mm-hmm.
and knew its failings and knew how it fails to provide nourishment for what is most important. And he devoted his life to providing that spiritual nourishment to other people. So it's very important, I think, to have people like that who know the secular world and who read widely and understand what they're up against in trying to bring God to people via the sacraments and via spiritual guidance.
It's common in our day for people to be bereft of hope, or at least have hope challenged. The current scandal we're facing in the church, talking about culture, this is a post-Christian society. What did he think about the future? Are our best days behind us, I guess, as the church?
No, he was not at all a pessimist. He did not live to see this latest round of scandals, but I don't think that would have made him lose hope any more than the rest of the fallen world made
right.
him lose hope. He, if anything, saw himself and faithful Catholicism as part of a counterculture, and a counterculture that is growing in this country despite the scandals that we see and despite the sometimes very public discussions of disappointment with the Catholic Church. The counterculture that we speak of in the pages of this book can be found in places like the Catholic Information Center
right.
and like student groups that didn't exist before, like Focus, and other new institutions that we talk about in the book. We talk about how the phoenix of hope is arising despite the blasted landscape out there.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
so that was really the bottom line of Father Arne's legacy, was all the reasons for hope, all the reasons to have faith and take action in this world because you're part of a because you're part of a counterculture.
Did he see that the task in front of us at the moment is, in a sense, rebuild the church so that it has so that the watching world recognizes that the church has something to offer, answers to questions that they might be asking, or solutions to problems that they're facing, you know, or healing for hurts that they have. I guess what I'm asking is, you know, there's been all this discussion about the Benedict option and this. What is the relationship between church and culture? What's the degree of withdrawal that's necessary? What's the degree of engagement with the world? How do you engage the world without accommodating to the world? How do you remain distinct without becoming separatist? How did he deal with those questions, and how did he see the proper balance?
You know, it's funny, Al, because in this post, in this moment of scandal for the church, there is suddenly a lot of discussion about the importance of the laity.
Right.
But Father Arnie was making this point constantly before the scandals broke.
Mm-hmm.
And what he insisted on was this, the sanctification of everyday life.
Yes.
Look to yourself first. Look to your going to confession. Look to your look to your own house first. And this was a very empowering message for people who tend to think that, you know, great social forces are wrecking the church or wrecking the culture.
Right.
So start with yourself. That
yes.
was the bottom line.
Hold it there, Mary. Take a break. We'll come right back. My guest is Mary Everstadt, taking a look at an unusual book. It's called The Last Homily. It's a late-life conversation with Father Arnie Panula.
Our Lady of Grace Books and Gifts is sponsoring a Christmas mini book fair. On Friday, November 30th, join Teresa Tamio as she broadcasts Catholic Connection live outside of Our Lady of Grace in the studios of Ave Maria Radio. Then meet a distinguished group of Catholic authors as they sign and discuss their spiritual works, like Gary Mashuda, Tom Nash, and Bill Castle. It's all at Domino's Farms Lobby C in Ann Arbor, November 30th from 8 till 2. Email customer service at OurLadyOfGraceBookstore.com.
Myler & Zipka, Certified Public Accountants, is proud to support Ave Maria Radio programming. Myler & Zipka offer great services to WDEO listeners in Metro Detroit for all of your accounting and tax needs. Call Ken Zipka and let him know you appreciate him helping to keep Catholic radio alive in this area. Ken can be reached at 734-930-5500. That's 734-930-5500. Or on the web at mspccpa.com.
Ann Arbor Smiles welcomes Dr. Patrick DiDonato and Dr. Abigail Walker to their team. Patrick is a parishioner of St. Thomas the Apostle in Ann Arbor, and Abigail is a pediatric dentist with openings available without a wait. Learn more about them at AnnArborSmiles.com. The team at Ann Arbor Smiles offers nearly every specialty in two convenient locations, including cosmetic dentistry, braces and Invisalign, and even sleep apnea. Ann Arbor Smiles provides care for the entire family. Visit AnnArborSmiles.com.
Cantata Academy Chorale is delighted to present our Luminous Night Christmas Concerts on Sunday, December 2nd at St. Malachy in Sterling Heights at 4 p.m. and Sunday, December 9th at Our Lady of La Salette in Berkeley at 3 p.m. Advance adult tickets are $15 a person and $13 for seniors and students. At-the-door tickets are $18 for adults and $16 for seniors and students. For more information and to purchase tickets, visit cantataacademy.org. That's cantataacademy.org.
Since 1916, a lot of independent agents have recommended auto owner's insurance, and a lot of parents have taken that recommendation to heart. So have a lot of their children, and grandchildren, and great-grandchildren. As we celebrate our first 100 years, Auto Owner's Insurance thanks all those who have put their trust in us, and all the generations who will.
Call Choice Insurance Agency at 734-641-4200.
Cresta in the Afternoon is brought to you in part with the generous support of MonasteryGreetings.com. MonasteryGreetings.com features hundreds of foods and gifts made by abbeys, convents, and monasteries. Fruitcakes, jams, and jellies, cakes and cookies, coffee, tea, and honey, chocolate and fudge, all from monks and nuns. It's one way to shop for Christmas and support religious life. More information, including a catalog, at MonasteryGreetings.com. That's MonasteryGreetings.com.
Underwritten in part by the following nonprofit.
The Catholic solution to the healthcare problem is here. Are you fed up with the current healthcare system, paying too much for your healthcare costs? Solidarity HealthShare is a healthcare sharing ministry which provides an ethical way to fund healthcare costs while protecting and practicing our Catholic beliefs. Best yet, Solidarity HealthShare's members are exempt from the fines and penalties in the Affordable Care Act. Visit SolidarityHealthShare.org to join like-minded Catholics in sharing medical expenses.
Ever thought you'd make a bundle by trading in or selling your used vehicle only to find out it's worth a dinner for two? Well, it's much more valuable to donate your vehicle to Ave Maria Radio. Thousands of Americans donate their vehicle each year. The donation to Ave Maria is easy, tax-deductible, and supports our efforts to evangelize. A year from now, will you remember that dinner or your gracious and selfless donation? Go to AveMariaRadio.net to find out more. That's AveMariaRadio.net.
Good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta. With me is Mary Eberstadt. We're looking at her most recent offering called The Last Homily, Conversation with Father Arne Pinula. The last few months of his life, he was a longtime friend of Mary's, and they talked. They had an agreement. Whoever would go first would share their thoughts as they approached eternity, and the other would publish on them. You mentioned he did his dissertation on John Henry Newman, and he was also a priest of Opus Dei, so he clearly had a deep commitment to the thought of Jose Maria Escriva. How did he put the two together? How did he see them connected?
Well, again, he seems to have started all of his life from the premise that what's important is sanctifying everyday life. Now, that
yes.
might sound like an abstract thing, but it means doing every bit of work with the thought that it is to the glory of God or
right.
as an offering to God. These are very foreign concepts in our culture, and to see someone, a sophisticated person, you know, who traveled in high circles and low circles and was sort of a friend to anyone who knew him, to see someone making an offering of his life that way was just one of the most inspiring examples I've ever seen, which is why I really wanted to pull together his last thoughts into a book so that other people who would never know Father Arne could see what it was about him that inspired so many people in Washington and the surrounding area.
Yeah. Did Newman have a high sense of the laity, role of the laity?
That I can't speak to
okay.
because, in all honesty, I didn't read the 600-page dissertation on Newman that Father Arne wrote. But there are a lot of figures we talked about in those final conversations, and they really were spontaneous conversations, but he was such a learned man that all kinds of names come up, all kinds of ideas, new books, classics. And so what I did after all the conversations were compiled was I went through and put in footnotes to everything so that people encountering the book could just read the text, or if they were interested in following up on the thoughts, they can go to the sources directly.
Yeah, yeah, no, that's good. That's very helpful. I noticed a number of references here that I wanted to follow up on, too. What did he read? What did he especially find helpful?
It seems that practically everything, but in a classic way. So, for example, he studied Latin in order to read Aquinas, and he did this before he was a priest.
Wow.
He did this just for the intellectual interest of reading Aquinas in the original. The Catholic Information Center itself is a bookstore. It's the best religious bookstore within the D.C. area.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a great collection of, again, the classics and also more contemporary books. When, for example, Archbishop Chaput published Strangers in a Strange Land, the CIC had an event for him. He came and spoke. Some of, others of us spoke. And this is one of the conversations in the book with Father Arne. So he covered a great deal of ground intellectually, but he did it in a way that was accessible to people who were not schooled. And this was another remarkable thing about his example. He had a very brilliant way of putting complicated ideas into simple prose, and I think that also comes through in this book. And above all, he wanted to reach people outside the church who he thought were unaware of the patrimony of the church and what the church could give to them.
Mm-hmm.
So he was about evangelization before that phrase new evangelization
yeah.
was put out there.
Yeah.
It was a remarkable example.
He knows he's facing death. The world of ideas is still very important to him because those are tied to the idea of truth, and Christ himself is the truth. What did he talk about in terms of his death, his personal death? What was he anticipating? What was he fearing?
Well, the remarkable thing is he seems to have feared nothing at all. He was out in public until 2 days before he died. He was out in public with bruising on his face. He was reminiscent of the example of St. John Paul II because he made an example of his death as well as of his life. And toward the end, in one of the last conversations in the book, I asked him those questions. I asked, well, what is it like to be this close? And he gave a stunning answer. He said, people don't understand that it's not just those last hours. It's that you're tending towards something. He said, when people are frightened before death, when they're regretful, fearful, it's because they've been tending toward that for a long time. And he said, people who are just can't wait to get to the light have been tending toward that for a long time.
Hmm.
I'm paraphrasing, but
yeah.
It was such a fearless, forthright answer. And it was clear that he believed every word of it. There are testimonials at the end of the book, including one by a longtime friend of his, Peter Thiel, founder of PayPal
yeah.
and Silicon Valley entrepreneur.
He lost his faith, didn't he?
In all of these, yeah. Pardon?
Didn't Peter lose his faith?
I don't know the state of his faith, but I do know that he and Father Arne were friends for decades.
Okay.
And that every one of these people whose recollections are in the appendix to the book would attest to the same thing, which is that they saw no fear. They saw only joy in Father Arne as he dealt with the pain and suffering of stage 4 cancer toward the end. It was really something that left a mark on everyone who knew him during those months, and it's why this book came into being. Because I had never myself seen an example like this and really wanted to put it out there in the world so that other people could meditate on what it is like to approach death as joyfully as this priest did.
See, this is, to me, a great contribution. Over this last generation, we've gotten very comfortable as a society talking about the most intimate details of our lives, both the good and the bad, I suppose the ugly as well. But we need more examples of this sort where we can see a man who, it sounds as though he's saying that he's facing death very much the way he was facing life.
Yes, absolutely. I would guess we all agree that courage is in pretty short supply these days,
mm-hmm.
In many places. And this was courage animated by such joy and such faith that what was coming next for him was going to be what he had waited for all his life.
Yeah.
And again, you know, we read about the saints and we read inspirational stories, and sometimes we tend to think that that's all stuff that's in some distant, glorious
right.
past.
Right.
But this was an example right in front of my eyes and right in front of the eyes of everyone else who knew him, of someone who was actually living it. And again, it was with the idea of inspiring people that I collected those conversations. And I'm very happy to say that he saw the manuscript right before he died.
Oh, he did. That's
he
beautiful.
And seemed happy about it. He did not see, of course, the beautiful recollections that are in the appendix by people from all walks of life, some of them anonymous, testifying to his effect on their spirituality.
Yes, yeah.
But it's very much my hope that the kind of mark he left on some of the rest of us can be shared by readers of the book.
Yeah.
Because nothing would have made him happier than to think that those lessons would live on.
Well, models of this sort, I mean, it does sound as though he was a living saint. And we need those examples. And I agree with you. Oftentimes, stories of godly lives seem distant. They seem relegated to the past. I mean, that's what was so exciting about John Paul II and Mother Teresa. They were within our generation. And it sounds as though Father Arnie is one of those that should be looked to here as a model for how to live. He was a priest, and what did he think about the changes in the priesthood over the span of his life? Did he talk about that at all?
Oh, he certainly did. He talked about how the scandals of 2002 seemed to have come largely out of a certain generation of priests.
Mm-hmm.
He talked about priests who were badly catechized in the 60s, 70s, 80s,
yeah.
And about the connection between the scandals of 2002 and the fact that so many in the priesthood seemed not to believe what they were teaching. So there's a whole chapter in the book about him reflecting on all of that, and I'm sure he would have said the same thing, Al, about the scandalous moment that we find ourselves in now,
yeah.
that it is a result of, you know, a lack of faith by people charged with the deposit of faith
right.
and with keeping the faith.
What
so,
would
yes, he did reflect on that.
What would he have said was the greatest challenge of being a priest in the modern era?
Well, I tried to ask that question, but as with so many other things, his answer was not what I would have expected. He said he was never lonely. He said that he was with people so often that he liked to be alone with his thoughts,
yes,
with his
uh-huh.
prayers. He had unexpected answers to questions like that. In another conversation, I talked to him about, you know, modern maladies, addiction, anxiety, and he made the remarkable statement that he tried so hard to help people with those because these were not things he had experienced himself.
Interesting.
Again, an astonishing example of faith and perseverance.
Mary, thank you so much. It's always good talking to you, and this is a very unusual book. I'm excited about it, and thank you.
Thank you, Al.
Ave Maria Radio's own Al Cresta will be speaking and taking your questions about the crisis in the Catholic Church. Join Al, along with Dr. Mary Healy, at Christ the King Catholic Church in Ann Arbor, Thursday, December 6th. Get up to date with the facts and learn how to take action as responsible lay faithful. That's Thursday, December 6th, 7 p.m. at Christ the King Catholic Church with Al Cresta. For more information, call 734-930-4524. That's 734-930-4524.
In anticipation of the great feast of the Nativity of our Lord, Old St. Mary's Catholic Church in Detroit will offer a series of lessons and carols for Advent on Sunday, December 2nd at 2:30 p.m., featuring a performance of Lauritzen's O Magnum Mysterium. Participating will be the Old St. Mary's Choir, the Fillerettes Women's Chorus, and the Old St. Mary's String Orchestra. There is free and guarded parking. Please see oldstmarysdetroit.com. That's oldstmarysdetroit.com.
People ask how they can care for older family members who can't fully care for themselves. One answer is Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care. Visiting Angels assists adults nationwide with 600 locations to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Their caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meals, and light housework. Services are provided up to 24 hours per day, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. More information, including franchise opportunities, is on the web at visitingangels.com.
Christmas should bless those who give, those who receive, and those in greatest need. Cross Catholic Outreach's Christmas catalog offers a way to do just that. With it, families can provide milk for hungry babies or sponsor a village well to supply safe, clean water. These unique Christmas projects can also be given to honor a friend or a loved one. Learn about more ways to bless the poor this Christmas by calling 866-836-7784 or by visiting crosscatholic.org/AveChristmas today.
Would you like to honor a veteran this Christmas? Making a commitment to our nation's veterans, Ave Maria School of Law has created a Veterans Wall of Honor displayed inside the Veterans Memorial Law Library on campus. The law school invites the community to make a donation, placing a plaque on a commemorative wall in tribute to beloved veterans, fallen heroes, or those currently serving in the armed forces, keeping the memory of their service to our nation alive for many years to come. For more information, please contact Ave Law's Development Office at 239-687-5405.
Since 1916, a lot of independent agents have recommended auto owner's insurance, and a lot of parents have taken that recommendation to heart. So have a lot of their children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren. As we celebrate our first 100 years, Auto Owners Insurance thanks all those who have put their trust in us and all the generations who will.
Call Choice Insurance Agency at 734-641-4200.
It's time to take control of your healthcare journey and experience healthcare fully alive with CMF Curo. Krista and Justin say,
we love having the understanding, decision-making, and control of our healthcare in our own hands and having the option to bear one another's burdens. But most importantly, we love helping others when they need medical support.
CMF Curo is a Catholic healthcare ministry that values the health of the whole person, spirit, mind, and body.
To experience healthcare fully alive for you and your family, visit mycatholichealthcare.com.
Light of the East, weekends on Ave Maria Radio.
I'm Father Thomas Loya. This week on Ave Maria, en route to our Lord's Nativity, we pass by the Feast of St. Nicholas and the Feast of the Conception of the Mother of God in the womb of St. Anne, also known as the Immaculate Conception.
Saturday evenings at 8:30 and Sunday mornings at 9 on 990 WDEO Ave Maria Radio.
Good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta. It's been roughly 2 months since the China Holy See agreement on provisional agreement on the appointment of bishops, and right now it looks as though it's just another tool for Beijing to suppress the Chinese faithful, and the damage goes even deeper than the Chinese government's selection of Catholic bishops, as critical as that is. For the hierarchically structured Roman Catholic Church. We're going to find out more by talking with Nina Shea. Nina's the director of the Center for Religious Freedom at the Hudson Institute, and she's been an international human rights lawyer for more than 30 years. She works extensively for the advancement of individual religious freedom. She's co-authored Silenced, How Apostasy and Blasphemy Laws Are Choking Religious Freedom Worldwide, and Persecuted, the Global War on Christians. She's also a contributing editor to the book, The Persecution and Genocide of Christians in the Middle East, which grew out of a study conference that she and I both participated in. And Nina, it's good to have you back. Thanks.
Great to be with you, Al. Thank you.
Well, it's about 2 months now, and, you know, you always hope for the best. But there were a lot of misgivings among friends of mine, anyways, regarding this provisional agreement on the appointment of bishops between the Holy See and China. What are we looking at this moment? What's it look like?
Well, Al, it looks even worse now. There were misgivings before. Cardinal Zen of Hong Kong, the Emeritus Cardinal of Hong Kong, yep, warned us about it, and it's even worse than anticipated. There, of course, has been persecution continuing and getting worse. And the bishop's appointment, and I'll describe that in a minute, but the bishop's appointments only went one way. This was supposed to unify the church. That was the whole rationale behind it, but behind the Vatican signing it and going along with an imperfect, or as the Secretary of State of the Vatican calls it, a not good agreement. The whole rationale was that it would unify the church under the Pope as head.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, what has happened, it has unified the church on Beijing's terms, and the Pope has been relegated to figurehead. And so that means that the Vatican has now accepted the bishops, the seven bishops or eight bishops that have been excommunicated by prior popes and that were recognized and appointed by Beijing, the communist government of Beijing. But the 30 bishops who were appointed by prior popes and were faithful to the Vatican but rejected and considered underground by the government of China, those have not been accepted by Beijing. So there was no reciprocity there whatsoever. And by the fact that Pope Francis has now accepted and ordained all the eight bishops that were appointed by Beijing, and he did this around the time of this agreement, like a day, you know, a couple days before or after, we're not sure when, that indicates that he may only have the right to rubber stamp, not even the right to veto, which was this was touted to be an appoint. You know, this yeah, agreement, under this agreement, the China would nominate bishops, and the Pope had a right to veto. I'm not even certain about that because that's not the precedent that was said, if that's a precedent, back in September with the signing of this agreement. The Pope accepted all of them that the government put forward and even replaced two of the underground bishops with two formerly excommunicated bishops that were nominated by the, appointed by Beijing, two heads of diocese. So that's, you know, that's the, it's a failure of reciprocity. And so there is no unity. Those 30 underground bishops are still in the underground. And one of them has been arrested since this has been and disappeared into the, you know, the system. Since this agreement was signed, four underground priests have been arrested. Other priests in another province have been rounded up and put into re-education sessions. Much like what has happened on a mass scale to,
yes,
the Uyghurs, the million Uyghurs in re-education camps in Western China, the Muslims there. So it's similar, although on a much smaller scale at this point. But there's two very well-known and popular Marian shrines that have been destroyed since this agreement was signed. There have been churches the crosses take removed and the steeples toppled from several of the churches. In some churches, the president of China's picture has replaced Jesus Christ. There are police outside the churches. There are surveillance cameras. In one church I read about, there were 17 surveillance cameras now on the Catholic Church. And I'm just talking about the Catholics. Of course, this is happening across the board in China with all the different religions,
right,
different ways of repressing them. The catechism is now censored by China on the Internet. Online Bible sales were banned last April. So that's a strangulation. It's been called a strangulation of evangelization
this is,
by the Catholic sources there.
This is unbelievable. I mean, this the reason it's so weird is that it doesn't appear at this point that the Catholic Church got anything out of the deal, so to speak. And it was also, this provisional agreement was signed at a time when China had already begun cracking down on religious liberty. So
that's correct. Yeah, yeah, that's correct.
This makes no sense. I don't see.
Well,
in other words, how is it in the interest of the Holy See to follow through on this agreement?
Well, it's a mystery to me. It's been negotiated for 30 years. That's how long I've been tracking this and trying to examine what was being discussed.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that Archbishop Celli in Rome at first, you know, 30 years ago, 25 years ago, he was doing this negotiation.
Yeah.
There's always a tendency on the part of statesmen, and I've seen this in our own State Department here in the United States, to come up with a deal, to really, you know, bring home a deal and continue dialogue. And so that may have been the motives of some. There may have been a thinking, well, there is a crackdown. Maybe this will help our people. And that's the most generous interpretation.
Right.
But I'll tell you, Cardinal Zen, again, pointed out something that's very, very worrisome. It's alarming. It undermines the church. And that is, a few days after there was such commotion about this inside China by the faithful, among the faithful, so they had so many questions that the Pope, on September 26, 4 days after the signing of this agreement by the Secretary of State, or the Deputy Secretary of State of the Vatican, 4 days later, the Pope felt compelled to write a letter, and he asked for their trust. We know what we're doing. And he didn't provide any further details. The document itself is secret. The agreement itself is secret. And Cardinal Zen observed that this whole process has led to this message. The message is that the Holy See wants the faithful to say, accept what we have decided, have faith in us, accept what we've decided, and Beijing tells that same faithful in China, obey us, the Holy See already agrees with us. So that's what's so dangerous. Obey us, the Holy See already agrees with us. It undermines the teaching authority, the moral authority and the teaching authority of the Catholic Church. And so that's why this is not just, you know, like, well, a useless document. It's worse than useless. It's become apparent that it's a dangerous document. You know, I think of, Al, I think of all the things that George Weigel has written about the Eastern churches, the Russian Orthodox Church, for example, during the communist period, during the Soviet Union. How it was so deeply compromised, it became essentially a KGB church, with actual agents. The Hungarian Catholic Church had actually number-bearing agents, communist agents, when the files were opened after the wall fell. And some of them infiltrated Vatican II. They infiltrated the Vatican radio. So this is extremely, and it hurt those churches. Still to this day, those churches are weakened. Some of them, like the Russian Orthodox Church, is still trying to overcome that reputation.
Right. Right.
And so this could be a historic, catastrophic mistake to do this. In my view, that's my view. This agreement is a historic mistake.
Is there a chance to revisit this in the near future? This was a provisional agreement. Are there supposed to be, you know, further ratifications of this?
Yes, it is provisional. I think that's the only hopeful sign here is that maybe it can be dropped, quietly dropped, without further repercussions.
The problem has been those appointment of bishops, though, right?
Yes, but there have been eight appointed so far. So You know, so there's, and they can be excommunicated, I suppose. Yeah. But, I mean, it is a very confusing time for the faithful in China. It can be reviewed, I think, in a couple years, in 2 years. I think that there is hope that the damage can be limited, and we'll see. But I think so far it's been extremely worrisome. There is youth are out. You know, this is shocking. Most Americans don't realize this. Young people under the age of 18 are not allowed to enter a church now in China, and this is new. This is new under the new regulations this year under a religious law that passed last year. So, and this is another example. Here we find another example of how this document is so dangerous, this agreement, provisional agreement. There was a youth synod in Rome, as you know, I think last month.
Yes.
Went on for a month. Several Chinese bishops, including two Chinese bishops, including one who had been excommunicated and recently under this agreement taken in by the Vatican, you know, ordained by the Vatican, they attended that youth. They were participants in that youth synod in Rome, and there was never. They talked about the whole purpose of the synod is how to bring in the young people into the church.
Yeah.
And how to get them engaged in the church. And what we're seeing is not a single question put to them about their active ban on young people going into entering a church.
Wow. 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 That's amazing. To say that if you're under 18, you can't enter into a church shows exactly the attitude that communists have toward religion. That it's a
yeah,
dangerous
well,
social
right.
Aberration. Yeah.
Right. They don't want any personal space. They don't want any sacred space. They want to control everything.
Yeah.
And in fact, this is something that's completely Orwellian. They have a new social credit score system, which the Wall Street Journal has written about a number of times. But every individual within 2 years is going to get an extensive grade that's going to limit them in their ability to take different forms of transportation, live certain places,
wow.
Study certain places, and it's based on their behavior.
Wow. Nina, thank you so much. Great talking with you. Terrible situation.
Cresta in the Afternoon is underwritten in part by Charity Mobile. Communication is critical. And in today's world, your cellular service is your lifeline to family and friends. Ave Maria Radio and Charity Mobile are partners in communicating the most important message of all, the good news of Jesus Christ. Charity Mobile is a provider of cellular LTE phones and service and has been a proud supporter of Ave Maria Radio and other pro-life causes for more than 10 years. More information at charitymobile.com. Charity Mobile. Charity begins at phone. Cresta in the Afternoon is brought to you in part with the generous support of MonasteryGreetings.com. MonasteryGreetings.com features hundreds of foods and gifts made by abbeys, convents, and monasteries. Fruitcakes, jams, and jellies, cakes and cookies, coffee, tea, and honey, chocolate and fudge, all from monks and nuns. It's one way to shop for Christmas and support religious life. More information, including a catalog, at MonasteryGreetings.com. That's MonasteryGreetings.com.
Abortion.
Pornography.
Embryonic stem cell research.
Corporate contributions to Planned Parenthood. Do you invest in companies that are engaged in these practices? The Ave Maria Mutual Funds don't, and their investment portfolios reflect that. Ave Maria Mutual Funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can consider investing in the no-load Ave Maria Mutual Funds. You can learn more about the Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com. The advisor invests in securities only if they meet the fund's investment and religious requirements, and as such, the return may be lower or higher than if the advisor made decisions based solely on investment considerations. The fund's method of security selection may or may not be successful, and the fund may underperform or outperform the stock market as a whole. All mutual funds are subject to market risk, including possible loss of principal. For a prospectus, which includes objectives, risks, fees, charges, expenses, and other information that should be read and considered carefully before investing, call 1-866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com. Distributed by Ultimus Fund Distributors, LLC.
Good Good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta. Coming up, as I go off the air, we've got Catholic Answers Live with the open forum with Tom Nash and Jimmy Akin. And then tonight on EWTN Television will be the World Over Live with Raymond Arroyo. Tomorrow on Cresta in the Afternoon, Matthew Bunsen joins me once again. This time, though, talking over the life and teaching of St. Pope Paul VI, a pope that's often forgotten between John the 23rd and John Paul II, but a very consequential papacy. So we'll look at the life and teaching of Paul VI, and Peter Wallison will be joining me from the American Enterprise Institute, looking at the growth of what's called the administrative state. You might say big government under the executive branch, and what do we need to rein it in? So thanks for being with me today. Follow up at AveMariaRadio.net. Keep us in your prayers, and I'll see you tomorrow, Lord willing.
Cresta in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio, and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. The executive producer is Nick Tom. To follow up on any of the guests or information presented on today's program, visit the Cresta Guest Archive at AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMaria Radio.net. To listen to this or any other edition of Cresta in the Afternoon, visit the audio archives at AveMariaRadio.net. Or to order a CD of the program, call 734-930-4506 or email orders at AveMariaRadio.net. That's 734-930-4506 or orders at AveMariaRadio.net.